Well, welcome to those of you who are here, and to everybody who went to WIPTA, enjoy this recording. So we had a deadline for TinyBox. I want to take a minute to discuss feedback on that. How do you guys feel about what you got in? Still missing, at least just prior to the start of class, at least two. And I've got some comments from others. But for those of you here, confident in your design, done, it's ready to go. One clear nodding yes, and then a lot of no response as far as I can read off your faces. Ends up if you say mine's gonna work and I'm happy with where my layout stands right now. Okay, just the second half. I'm happy with where my layout is right now. Ends up. Okay. A little less than half and a lot of unsure. So I speak on behalf of some of the students who aren't here in that I did receive some emails this morning saying, can we have over the weekend? Can we extend it a little bit? So I think what we'll do is hold off on the midterm until Monday. Give the midterm out right after class Monday. If your PCBs are ready to go, you're happy with them, you're done with that. If you think you need a little bit of extra time to make sure things are going to be functional and finish up, have over the weekend, have them in prior to class on Monday, and I can order them right after class on Monday. That won't put us too far behind on schedule. Does that seem reasonable? For anybody who wasn't a clear yes, raising my hand, my PCB is ready to go, is that going to give you enough time to get to a, yeah, I'm ready to go? Okay. Sure. I don't mind to do that. So we can have the midterm due on Monday. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. If not, then we're going to jump back into where we were in lecture. So last time, we kind of took a step back and looked a little bit about where we stood in terms of switching loss. Found that with most of the topologies that we've looked at so far, where we're achieving ZVS, we've sacrificed a little bit in order to achieve ZVS, and that we've allowed higher ripple. This is particularly true of the things we looked at early in the course, the PWM type topologies allowing larger ripple to achieve ZVS, things like dual electric bridge series resonant, where these AC link topologies that's a little bit more nuanced. But fundamentally, the further we go, the more energy we need available for ZVS. We're going to have some amount of circulating current that's going to have some impact on conduction losses. That gives us zero voltage switching, which helps with certain switching loss mechanisms, but isn't just a cure-all to make our switching losses go to zero. We talked about, so we should get rid of this hard charging of capacitances, and significantly reduce or eliminate our turn-on overlap loss, because now we're turning on the device with zero volts across it. There's no IV overlap. Turn-off is now subject to the actual implementation. We've increased the total circulating currents shown here. We have higher peak currents during turn off. We may actually increase those turn off overlap losses, which could be problematic, subject to the caveat of, well, you can't really determine these until you've done a specific gate driver implementation. And these turn off overlap losses are generally way smaller than turn on. So maybe we're okay with a small increase there to get rid of these things, turn on overlap losses. Reverse recovery, gotten rid of, haven't really changed anything on the gate drive. This requires body diode conduction, requires assessment of the dead time and setting that really well. And then shoot through, we should design so that we don't have significant shoot through anyway. Okay. What's left is some of these other parasitics and what happens there. Okay. I gave an example of this LD, the drain inductance, or any really inductance in the power loop. There's other parasitics to look at beyond what we've analyzed that would give caveats to earlier discussions. Things like when I say C switch losses, any of these capacitive losses are entirely eliminated. So if I start to model parasitics, I still have some resistance here. I still have some conduction loss associated with getting ZBS of that. Should be way, way smaller than just shorting out that capacitor, but there still is some residual loss mechanisms, right? Nothing's going to be completely lossless. But particularly the things like this power loop inductance, let's start to think about what is our ideal switching behavior, and we talked about that a little bit last time, which is going to lead us into what is chapter 20 in the Fundamentals of Power Electronics book, which talks about resonant switch topologies. And it's been a good amount of time on zero current switching, quasi-resonant switch, a couple of different implementations. We'll talk about, in some sense, the dual of that, which is the zero voltage switching, quasi-resonant switch. So you'll have a couple of different examples. So we'll hop into that. The idea behind this resonant switch concept is that we are going to remove the switching cell, or the part of the circuit that contains the switches, from any of our traditional PWM topologies, buck boost, juke, any of these. And we're going to look at just the behavior of this switching cell, modify that to include some resonant components, which may be actual things we insert, or the parasitic elements of that switching cell when implemented, and then alter the behavior in order to achieve advantageous switching. Then we can put it back in, and just by analyzing this part, we can say how the behaviors of the parent converter are modified. Basically, what we're going to look at is the conversion ratio of this switch cell. Then when I plug it back in here, my previous conversion ratio is just going to be modified by plugging in what I solved here. And I can put it in different converters. Once I've solved this switch cell, I can put it in a boost, a buck boost, or anything else, and not have to do any additional analysis. This is part of the beauty of treating this switching cell separately. So to kind of state why that's a valid thing to do, I'm going to look at the switch network of some of these parent converters at high frequency. Let's say this is my buck. I've got a large filter inductor, the typical CCM buck. Big filter capacitor, and an input voltage source. And those all matter in terms of determining kind of dynamics of the converter and ripple specifications. But if these are large filter elements, LF and CF, it means that when I look at high frequency, when I look at the actual switching behavior, they're not going to matter, right? LF is just going to look like a current source. CF is going to look like a voltage source, and the voltage source is a voltage source. When I'm just looking at during a switching transition, none of these elements are going to change. They're all going to look DC, right? This is our typical kind of small ripple approximation on this. At high frequency, these things just look like current sources and voltage sources. So if I apply that, then this LF becomes an open, this VG becomes a short, and what I'm left with is effectively a switch network that has my FET switch Q and my diode or synchronous FET switch D effectively in parallel, and it looks like this. Okay. If I look at a boost converter, again, filter inductor looks like an open. The output capacitor is going to look like a short. And my switch network looks like this. If I look at a buck boost, I'm going to have input capacitor or source, output capacitor or source that are going to look like shorts at high frequency. Inductor is going to look like an open. So I again look effectively like this. And even if I go down to something like the Chuke, an open, open, short, and I look like something like this. No matter what, at high frequency, these parent topologies of the switch network looks something like this. If all I have in it are filter type elements, filter inductors, filter capacitors. Okay. When I start to add resonant elements or elements which do not have small ripple, then those will come into play and show up on this switch network. Okay. So as an example, if I look back at my here soft switching VVS buck converter, what I did is took this inductor that was a filter element and dropped its value down and down until it had very large ripple on it and became active and resonant during switching transitions. So look at that in terms of the switch network for this buck converter. It would mean this LF goes to a resonant inductor. And then I can no longer say that during the switching transition, it just looks like a current source. It actually has significant resonance. That would mean that the switching network now has CF is still a short. My output is still supposed to be DC. And I would have effectively an inductor here. This, just draw it in series. LR be effectively in parallel with my two switches. And the purpose of that LR was to help me charge and discharge capacitance C switch, which was any parallel MOSFET capacitance, any parallel diode capacitance, any parallel inductor capacitance all lumped together, right? And we lumped that together making these same approximations, but okay, this is DC, so AC small signal ground, I lump everything together there. So that was my resonant network for what we'll come to know as ZVS quasi square wave switching. So that takes me to the next slide that we've covered before. So for a buck, what we did is we made this LR, we incorporated all the capacitances CR, our inputs are short, and our outputs are short due to decoupling capacitors. For a boost, to make it ZVS, the same thing. Just drawn the opposite way. For a buck boost, and let this inductance come very small. Incorporated capacitance across both of these devices, which again are effectively, whether it's from this node to the input, this node from the output, or this node to ground, they're all effectively in parallel here. C switch or CR, whatever you want to call it. So all three of these become this same effective circuit. I think these two we've looked at in class. This one you had on a homework assignment at some point. Chuke, we haven't done yet, but effectively CF, we'd let remain CF, and then we'd have LR1, LR2, one or both of these be resonant, in order to allow these devices to achieve ZVS. The capacitor would remain a filter element, so it'd be kind of an AC short. The input and output, we would have decoupling capacitors, and then we could incorporate capacitance of Q and capacitance of D, which would both effectively, because CF is now a short, be CR here. And so whether I make LR1 resonant and leave this as a filter inductor the opposite way, or make both of them small, everything's still in parallel, and it's still going to look like a high frequency network that looks like this. So in any of these topologies, if I look at the resonant elements that are incorporated into the operation, look at high frequency, what does my switch network look like? And I see L, C, and both switches are all in parallel. Okay, this is going to be a zero voltage switching quasi-square wave, I'll talk about it in a moment, converter. The idea behind incorporating these elements in is to obtain zero voltage switching with minimal modification of the waveform. Makes sense. Parallel capacitance is the parasitic parallel capacitance of our two switches. And the shunt inductance is what gives us current to charge and discharge that. So we've looked at that one, but there are other ways to incorporate a resonance into a two switch type converter. And so I'm going to show four ways. I'm going to divide these up by two metrics. First, what are you achieving? Either ZVS, ZCS. So these two on the left will be networks that are designed to achieve zero voltage switching. These two on the right, networks that are designed to achieve zero current turn off. And then whether the waveforms that result are going to be quasi-square wave or quasi-resonant. We'll see more detail on what this means, but generally quasi-square wave is just referring to waveforms that result from modifying my switch network with this type of resonance are going to look kind of like square waves with resonant edges. Like that, if I'm nice and flat up top. With quasi-resonant, it means that the waveforms that result are going to be completely resonant over some portion of the period. Something like that. Not fully resonant where they're AC only, well approximated by a fundamental, like we looked at with AC link converters. Generally, they're going to have some large resonance and then be zero or flat or linear for some significant portion of the period. Thus the quasi-resonant, resonant during some intervals, but not just the switching time and otherwise the square wave. Okay? So that's going to be these bottom two. So the one we've looked at, so on the previous slide, was the ZVS quasi-square wave. Like this. And that allowed us to achieve zero voltage switching of both devices and resulted in waveforms that were square wave other than right at those switching transitions. They were resonant kind of during the dead times, but otherwise square waves, like parent PWM topology. Okay. We can do a zero current switching version of that, which is going to be implemented by putting just both of these elements in series. We can do quasi-resonant versions of both, which are both going to have shunt capacitance and series inductance. Case shunt capacitance of the diode for ZCS, shunt capacitance of the MOSFET for ZVS. In this case, ZVS and ZCS is defined on the main switch, the active switch Q. Okay. So I'm going to get the VS, whenever my resonant element is in parallel with Q, that device will be zero voltage switching. It's incorporated into the behavior. It's not going to say anything about the diode. We'll actually find that in this case, for example, this diode is not going to have VVS. Diode, don't really care. You can't turn it on. But if you implement this synchronously, this could be one MOSFET and another MOSFET. This one would be hard switching. Thing over here, you get zero current switching of the diode on the CCS quasi-resonant in the bottom right. But I would be not getting ZVS with MOSFET. Okay. So here, make a note. Just ZVS or ZCS, which column is named according to what's happening with Q, that switch, which is the switch in any of these parent PWMs that has to be a MOSFET. D is the switch that can be a diode, could be a MOSFET as well. A MOSFET can always replace a diode. Okay. So I said this one down here, ZCS quasi-resonant, is discussed in detail in the book. So I'm going to instead cover this one here, the ZVS quasi-resonant switch network, and the ZVS quasi-square wave, no different than what we've done a few different times, with just allowing high ripple in the inductor on these parent PWM topologies. Okay. So let's dive in. So I'm going to look at analysis of this switch network within the ZVS quasi-resonant buck. I'm going to turn out from what we said earlier that it doesn't particularly matter what parent PWM topology it's in, because all of the results are going to be considering only the switch network here and decoupled by assuming I have a filter inductor here that has small ripple, so it just looks like a current source. So it doesn't really matter what's coming after this, as long as it's not loading the circuit. In a resonant manner at high frequency. So the ZVS quasi-resonant buck is going to incorporate two resonant elements. What I should have is a capacitance in parallel with the FET, and then an inductance in series between the FET and diode. And that's what I get here. If I look again at AC, the filter inductor would become an open, voltage source would become a short, and I'd have Q with a capacitance in parallel and an inductance over to D, a switch network from the previous slide. So why might we ever want to do this? At first glance, some of you might say this seems like a terrible converter because you are intentionally putting an inductance in your power loop, right? And even what I kind of just told you for tiny box challenges, you don't want to have inductance in your power loop, right? Well, if you've designed according to not having any inductance, then any small amount of inductance there is going to cause ringing and cause issues. But if you've designed such that that inductance is incorporated into the operation of the converter, then you can make that resonance advantageous for you. Okay. So that's going to be one of the main merits of the ZVS quasi-resonant switch cell. One good thing about it is it incorporates both, call it CDS and LS, the MOSFET, into operation. You may be able to design such that CR is actually CDS, just the MOSFET capacitance. LR is actually just your parasitic power loop inductance. More likely, that's going to force you to switch at unreasonably high switching frequencies, and you'd supplement those with actual elements, put an actual capacitor here, actual inductor here. But either way, you're putting an inductor in series with your parasitic, a capacitor in parallel with your parasitic capacitance. You're incorporating those things, so they're no longer just parasitics. Now they're actually part of the operation. Okay. So that's a good thing. Other merits, we're going to find that this is low current stress. I sub DS peak is IL. So we're not going to increase the current stress in this converter like we did with the quasi square wave. We had to let the inductor have 100% ripple. Can actually keep very low ripple on our output inductor, very low peak current stress going through our MOSFET. Now, sounds too good to be true. If I'm adding a bunch of resonant type behaviors to something and the current stresses don't go up, you might be able to guess, well, the voltage stress is going to take the hit. Okay. So VDS peak will increase significantly. And the other problem we're going to find momentarily that I've done nothing with the diode now. So, and what we're going to drive this diode is just a perfectly ideal diode. If I start modeling the capacitance or inductance of the diode, it's going to throw off the behavior. So if I can get a diode that's pretty darn close to ideal, this will work. My diode has a lot of capacitance, a lot of inductance. Waveforms are going to change. And we'll talk about that after we solve through. But diode assumed ideal. Okay. Perhaps I can make this, implement this in a way where this diode or some MOSFET that replaces it has much lower parasitics than the high side device, such that this will work for me. Okay. So let's look at the behavior. I'm going to look at the states of my resonant elements, ILR and VCR, my plots here. And so this thing is going to behave overall very similar to a buck converter, just with resonant modifications in certain intervals. So I'm going to look at this. I'm going to set my initial operating point, assuming that this thing operates somewhat like a buck converter. If I assume my MOSFET is on over here prior to the y-axis and then turns off at this time, what would happen before that? Well, I should have my inductor current flowing through the MOSFET and 0 volts across it. The MOSFET was conducting. I've got this L is just a filter element, so it has a constant IL. MOSFET was conducting, the diode's off, so all that current's flowing up through the MOSFET turned on, so it has 0 volt across it. Okay. So use that to kind of start my waveforms, and then I'll parse through what happens as I begin switching. Okay. So the MOSFET turns off at this time zero on my x-axis here. And what's going to happen? The MOSFET turns off, the diode was off. So I'm initially going to have a resonant circuit that looks something like a different color here. VG. My MOSFET turned off, so just CR is left in the circuit. It's in series with LR. And the diode is initially off. What I'm going to have is just my output current flowing through that. I could say output current flowing to the output, but since I'm looking at these two states, I don't really care where that's going. I'm just saying I'm going to have a fixed current flowing through both of these elements. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, so my ILR is just going to stay fixed at IL. And my voltage is going to begin to rise. It's going to rise at a rate of IL over CR, constant current going through a capacitor. Okay, where does this interval end? How long can I let that happen? What does that mean? So my output or my CR voltage is rising. Right now I have MOSFET off, diode off. CR voltage getting larger means voltage from this node to ground, from the bottom of the cap to ground, getting smaller, right? So I could say the voltage at the bottom of the cap is VG minus VCR. That voltage is going down. I need to figure out what's going on with the inductor. It means my voltages are decreasing. Eventually, this diode's going to turn on, right? As soon as V switch goes below ground, that diode's going to become forward biased and turn on. That's going to send me into my next interval. Okay. How do I know when the switch node voltage gets to zero? Well, what's the voltage on the inductor during this interval on LR? Minus the switch node. But we don't know what the switch node is, so the answer is real simple. You can intuit it. It's zero, right? I've got a constant voltage going through it. Voltage on LR is L DIDT. DIDT is zero, so I have 0 volts on that thing. So 0 volts here. So as soon as the capacitor voltage, CR, reaches VG, that means that the switch node is zero. If it goes any further, the diode will turn on. That means this interval continues till this voltage reaches VG, at which point diode turns on and my resonant circuit changes. So that diode turning on is going to short out this current source, effectively, and I'm going to end up with VG, CR, LL, and now the diode's on. My diode being short, it'll take over all of IL, and I'm left with just a series resonance here. Okay, so what's going to happen? Well, ILR is initially my output inductor current. So initially, the current flowing here is some large positive value, which means my capacitor voltage is initially going to increase. I can do that now because now I have non-zero voltage across this inductor. The rest of that's going to drop across the inductor as the current changes. My initial voltage on that inductor should be zero. So my current on the inductor is going to kind of start out flat. My voltage on the inductor is going to start out increasing, and then I'm going to resonate. My voltage on the capacitor gets higher, means I'm applying negative voltage to my inductor. It's going to begin to drop. This whole thing is going to continue resonating until my capacitor voltage returns to zero, which is going to take my inductor current somewhere down here. When my capacitor voltage returns to zero, that's when I'm going to turn the MOSFET back on at zero voltage. Right? If I'm late, its body diode will turn on. I'm going to try to turn it on exactly at this time to minimize any body diode conduction losses. And at this time, I'll have MOSFET on, the ZVS. Okay. Then what's going to happen? I turn my MOSFET on. It's going to short out. I'm going to remove this capacitor from my equivalent circuit, short it out by the MOSFET turning on. But initially, my diode is still on. Okay. Here the diode was taking the full inductor current. When this happens, my ILR is some negative value until ILR, this resonant inductor LR, takes over the inductor current again. The diode stays on, still conducting the difference between IL and ILR. Okay. So what I end up with is a circuit that looks like this, where both the MOSFET and diode are on simultaneously. They apply a fixed voltage across this resonant inductor and ramp its voltage up at a fixed rate of EG over LR. MOSFET's on through the remainder of the interval. Once I return to IL, diode shuts off. And then I can sit with the MOSFET on, diode off until the next switching period. Okay. Let's call these subintervals 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we use it to go and sketch the state plane. I'm going to label, really only have one other current of interest here. Call this minus I2. It's the value that this current reaches at the junction between subintervals 2 and 3. So I go to sketch the state plane for this. I'm going to use V base is equal to VG. R naught is root LR over CR. And I'm going to sketch the M sub R J sub R state plane. Call them JR and MR for the current through LR and CR. So what does that look like? I start with a current IL and a voltage 0. Normalize into the state plane, that's going to be M is 0 and J is capital JL. We'll start somewhere up here. This is JL. And in this first subinterval, my voltage increases at a constant rate while the current stays constant. That continues until I reach a voltage VG. Since I picked V base as VG, means this is going to continue until I reach a value of 1. My subinterval 1 is here. Then I'm going to go into subinterval 2, which is my resonant subinterval. And I have a radius associated with that. You can see immediately that that radius is of length JL, since I'm directly vertical here. So I guess I should clarify that I am indeed vertical. So my DC operating point for this resonant circuit, subinterval 2, I've got L and C and a voltage source. DC operating point is going to be VG on the capacitance, zero current in the inductor. Jumped ahead a bit there on my state plane. But that VG on the capacitor It's going to normalize the 1-0 current, so that is going to be my DC operating point. So this is my radius, R2, which is of length JL. And then I'm going to begin resonating in a direction that increases capacitance and decreases, or increases a capacitor voltage and decreases inductor current. That's going to be this direction. I'm going to resonate around this point until I get back to achieve zero voltage switching. Back to an MR is equal to zero. That's my subinterval 2. I'll call the total time of this resonance, which is normalized to an angle beta. 1 out of here. Subinterval 3, I'll go back and look, just ramps up the inductor current, so we had a fixed voltage applied across LR. And then subinterval 4, we just sit at this point here. The MOSFET on, diode off, and the output current conducting through the MOSFET. That's our state plane. Now let's go through and solve it. Subinterval 1, the linear subinterval. We're not going to get anything from it off the state plane. Go back and look. VCR is increasing with the slope IL over CR. And it goes from 0 to VG. And say IL over CR times T1 is equal to VG. Slope times time is the total change. Now we're going to normalize that, divide through by the base. I'll get rid of my VG, and then I'm going to have to multiply top and bottom by omega naught. T1 will become theta 1. The omega naught and CR will give me an R naught, and I'll end up with just JL. So this becomes theta 1 equal to 1 over JL. Subinterval 2 is my resonance subinterval. I'm going to get an equation for beta, an equation relating the radii. So for the radii, that first R2 squared is JL squared at the beginning of the interval. And at the end of the interval, you can express it looking at a triangle here. Say that that R2 is 1 plus, I neglected to label it here, this value, what we called minus J2, the current at the end of the resonant interval, called minus I2, normalized to minus J2. And that means like the Pythagorean theorem on that triangle here, R2 squared is J2 squared plus 1 squared. Just call J2 squared plus 1. And I'm just going to go ahead and rewrite that to solve for J2 because I want to use that substitution later. So J2 is square root of JL squared minus 1. Okay, the other equation we'll get from this subinterval is for beta. Beta is, I'm going to use this same triangle and say beta is pi plus this angle in the triangle here. Beta is pi plus whatever that angle is. And I could express that as an arctangent of 1 over J2, an arc cosine. I'm going to pick arc sine. arc sine, the hypotenuse is JL, and then the adjacent side is of length, or the opposite side is of length 1. So I'm going to say 1 over JL. Interval 3 is going to be another linear interval. We had inductor current increasing with a slope of Vg over Lr. Over the length of T3, it goes from minus I2 to IL. Vg over Lr times T3 is equal to I2 plus IL. So the magnitude of both of them. And then I am going to, again, normalize that, dividing through by I base. This will become J2 and JL. R naught and LR will give me an omega naught, and the V bases will cancel, so theta 3. Yes, theta 3 is equal to J2 plus JL. So the interval 4, again, kind of gets nothing because I'm just sitting at a single point on the state plane and have flat lines on my time domain. But again, I can say my equation for the total duration of the switching period says that theta 1 plus beta plus theta 3 plus theta 4 is equal to 2 pi over F. Duration of my 3 linear interval plus my 1 resonant interval is the overall period. Questions there? All good so far? Okay. So to bring everything together, I need to do the averaging step to get something relating all of this to what my output is, right? And we've normally averaged for the output current, but in this thing, the output current is just IL, right? If I put a load here, phi cap charge balance, IL is equal to I out in steady state. So that's zero average current through the capacitor. So that's not going to tell us much, okay? J out is JL. So what we need to do is actually, instead of averaging the output current, which is applying cap charge balance on the output capacitor, we need to average the switch node voltage, which is the same thing as applying volt second balance on this filter inductor. Okay. So the average switch node voltage is the average output voltage. This will give us an equation for the average output voltage. Normalized, that's going to be M, V out over Vg. Right. So what we're going to do is apply volt second balance on LF. Average voltage on LF over one switching period is going to be zero in steady state. Right? Has to be. Otherwise, we're not in steady state. And that's going to look like the average voltage on the switch node minus the output voltage, being a filter cap, we'll say is just capital D. Average switch node voltage, not something that's going to be really useful as is, so we'll just say, how do I get to that average switch node voltage? So it's input voltage minus the average voltage on VCR minus the average voltage on LR. Vg minus average voltage on VR minus the average voltage on LR minus V. Average voltage on VCR going to be to take the integral of this waveform that we drew on the bottom here and divide by TS. Integral over one period divided by TS. The average voltage on LR over one switching period. Zero. Same as four, right? Average over one switching period, the current in that doesn't change because I'm in steady state. It starts and ends at the same point. I average over an entire switching period, has to be zero on any inductor, right? So I can say that this goes to zero. And rearranging here, I have V is equal to VG minus average VCR. So I want to sketch VCR versus T. I'm going to take that waveform that we already sketched and do the average of it. So let me fill in here. I have a relationship that gives me the output voltage. Plug in all the results from my state plane analysis and get the overall set of equations that describes this ZVS quasi-resonant switch cell. I'm out of time, so we will pick up there next class, finish this off, and talk about the characteristics of the ZVS quasi-resonant switch in a buck converter. Okay. Thanks.